who would already have contracted for the result. Meadow Avenue ended at a set of train tracks. Forrester took a right, passing the ruins of an old whistle stop as he headed back in the direction of the state highway. The houses that lined the road were bigger than those packed into the tight streets of the town center. They had larger lawns and longer driveways. But the newest was probably more than 40 years old, built before whirlpool tubs and two-story entryways became fashionable. The sugar maples in their yards had stout trunks and were generous with their shade. Forrester lingered at an intersection, considering getting out of the car and going for a walk. But then he realized if he did, Pine Plain's idyllic character would quickly fade. He'd see the beer cans tossed onto the long lawns by bored teenagers over the weekend, and notice graffiti on the sides of the Main Street buildings, including the five-fingered star that proved even rural America wasn't immune to the awesome coolness of outlaw gangs. The torn shingles on the church and the rust stains from the broken gutter would be difficult to miss. The man sitting in the window seat at Kay's breakfast nook would have a wild expression and the vague smell of hospital antiseptic in his clothes. Step inside some of the houses and the last bits of the illusion would quickly melt away. Forrester had no illusions about human evils and how widespread they were. Even if he hadn't grown up in a town exactly like Pine Plains, he'd spent the last 23 years working for the Secret Service, a job that permitted no naivete. He knew the foibles of the powerful as well as the delusions of the powerless, and the knowledge choked him. Best to leave it like this, he thought. Best to leave the image intact, even as the snarling dog of cynicism, of apathy, and black despair growled at his neck. He was in a hole, and he was not getting out. The drive he'd taken to cheer himself up had done the opposite. There was no fooling himself, no fooling the cloud that clung to him every moment of every day. Forrester's cell phone buzzed. He pulled it from his pocket. Forrester?
Jerry, where are you?
Running a little late.
Wait until you see the nightgown I'm wearing. How long before you get here?
Half hour.
Oh, poo.
I'm going down to the bar.
In the gown? I might.
Call up room service. I'll put the pedal to the metal.
You better.
As Forrester switched off the phone, he noticed a police cruiser growing in his rearview mirror. He glanced down at his speedometer. He was doing just over 60. The state had a law against driving with a cell phone and required seatbelts to be buckled, but it was too late to do anything about either. The bubblegum lights erupted red. He hit his blinker and pulled off the side of the road before reaching for his service ID. 3. Amanda Rossi took another sip from the wine and glanced at her watch. It was nearly 7:30. Where the hell was Jerry? She thought to herself, putting the glass down. He should have met her at least 2 hours ago. Even if he'd gotten lost, it shouldn't have taken him this long to get here. And Jerry Forrester never got lost. Maybe his rotten bitch of a soon-to-be ex-wife had called him with some new bullshit. She was always torturing him with something, even though they were getting a divorce and hadn't lived together for nearly a year. Amanda couldn't understand why he even took the bitch's calls, since inevitably they ended with her screaming at him. Actually, Amanda could. Forrester wanted custody of his two sons, or at least some connection with them. The bitch was doing her damnedest to keep it to a minimum. Amanda caught a glimpse of herself in the hotel room's full-length mirror. The nightgown, which had seemed so sexy when she'd put it on earlier, looked a little silly, even sad. She decided to change into her street clothes. When she was dressed, she picked up her cell phone and called Forrester again. The call, her third in the past hour or so, went to voicemail like the others.
Hey, where are you? She asked. Meet me in the bar, okay? And hurry up, I'm hungry.
In the half hour she waited at the bar, Amanda turned down two different offers of drinks. With her hunger getting the better of her, she asked the bartender for a menu, then gave Forrester another call. Once again, she got his voicemail. She didn't bother leaving a message. The baked sole and vermouth was very good, but Amanda left most of it. Too many people were staring at her, calculating whether they might relieve her loneliness. This wasn't like Forrester, not at all. Amanda went back to her room, half expecting, hoping, that the light on the phone would be blinking, indicating she had a message. But it wasn't. Amanda started to dial the number for his office, thinking he might have checked in. She stopped before the call went through. Their relationship was a secret, and besides,